Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
So excited for you, Kimberly.
Thank you.
And
I'm excited.
This child, how much do you want this baby out of you?
So bad. So I'm so over it. But now I'm planning a wedding, so she has to wait till after the day of the wedding.
What, do you have the wedding date now?
Yeah.
Am I still invited?
You're so invited. Yes. July 29th.
I need to know that's soon.
Yeah.
This year?
Yeah, buddy.
So it's before the baby comes out?
It's before the baby comes out after his divorce happened. I know.
July 29th?
It's a Sunday.
Holy shit. Kim,
I know.
This is things I need to know. Because I need... Okay.
We're getting there.
Kim, wedding?
Wedding? Am I invited?
You're so invited.
Yes!
Invited so hard?
Can
I sit in your mom's seat? The ex-mom, maybe?
Yeah, fuck that. Hey, what if Jeremy... Can Jeremy dress as a woman?
What if I wear like a wig and say I'm your mom?
Jeremy can dress as Pogo the Clown as he does and sit at the table. Sit at the table with all the people I don't like. My mom included, yes.
Eric asked a very appropriate question about the baby, but my evil mind went to Dawn of the Dead with Ken Foray when he asked the most inappropriate question in Dawn of the Dead. Do you want to abort? It ain't too late, and I know how to do it. I'm like, thank you, black man. You're talking about killing my baby and asking me. Thank you.
He's like sharpening the end of a hanger. Like, I can do this. I've done this. I have like 7 sisters. I can do this.
I like the one tape that they didn't keep where he says that line and he's just like, fine. He just throws the hanger away. Whatever.
I'm not, no pressure here. I'm just saying.
No, save it for later. Save it. Roger comes over. Save it for later.
It's only because my love of placenta. So
I think this is it. Welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Got some hot takes about Kim's child.
This big ass baby.
Hell yeah, that big old baby in your belly.
I can't breathe.
And I'm excited.
I don't think I've been able to breathe for like at least 3 months.
I'm barely breathing because I'm growing a child. It is all within me and I want it to be out.
It's my
hemorrhoids. So I can do fucking hardcore drugs, maybe just some weed. Like,
are you taking your...
I want a lunch meat sandwich.
Are you taking your Lamar's classes?
Phil Lamar's.
Yes.
No,
I'm just
watching
Reading Rainbow.
I have a lot of experience with childbirth, so I'm a childbirth educator, so I'm well versed in the idea of childbirth. The thing I'm preparing myself for now is the postpartum period, because that's rough. So I'm mentally getting ready for that.
By the way, my name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you for joining
buddy.
On the show. To my left, the lady that we're talking about is none other than the very lovely Kimberly Ambrose.
Who
Kimberly.
Can't breathe. Thank you. Thank
Kimberly.
You.
I feel like, you know, you as a birth instructor and a doula for so many years, you know what I equate this to? Do you know the movie Aliens, right?
Very well.
Where they have Corbin, right?
Yes.
Or is it Corbin the guy?
Corbin Burnson?
No, who's the guy, the guy who leads them into the shit in Aliens?
Oh, I'm bad with names.
That'd be Gorman.
Gorman. Like, I feel not let me finish this statement, but I feel like you're Gorman, okay?
Okay.
Because you've done all this shit where you've done all the classes, you know how it is,
yep.
Right? And like, but all the other soldiers who have been through the shit, they're like
you don't even know.
This bitch don't even know
right.
What's going on. And now you're in the shit, and I feel like you're driving the truck in
yes.
There, and you're watching like, where's everybody at? Turn off the things. Turn off the...
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
Is what's happening to you.
So,
right now.
So how many births have you done? 50? Simulated. how many real drops? 2, including this one. So.
Well, people keep asking me questions that everybody wants to know, right? Like, mm-hmm. They'll be like, what hospital are you delivering in? And that's a trick question, mm-hmm. Because I'm not. And my answer is always the same. If everything goes to plan, we will be delivering at home.
Ooh.
People will say, are you going to get an epidural? As of now, I'm not planning to, but if I decide, then we will go to the hospital and get one. Are you going to breastfeed? if I am able to do that,
what's
that's something
the
I'd like
that
to.
You go to? I guess
St. Agnes, right down the street.
You know what? That's where we had our. That's where we had Jane.
Yeah,
we
that's
had
where
Jane
I was
at
born.
St. Agnes.
Yeah,
and it was a very. And that's the same place. I think my grandfather didn't die. He died at home, but he had his heart surgery.
Okay,
there.
Yeah.
And I had the worst ever hernia surgery there.
Oh, no.
Where I got checked out by an Indian doctor who checked me out gloveless, which I felt was
okay.
a weird thing in
okay.
a tender area
yeah, no.
for this
Ooh.
Old Indian man
that's
to touch
not,
my peepaw.
If that's not okay at the deli at the grocery store, it's not okay at a doctor's
yeah,
office.
Yeah, I'm like, can you glove this thing up or
yeah,
what?
Buddy.
And he was all up in and he's like, I like to get the feeling of it. Like,
easy
there.
Okay, Larry Nassar, Jesus.
Easy there, handsy five.
Yeah.
Can I say that I have a super special power.
By the way, we haven't introduced another God. My blood. My brother, Jeremy Woodworth,
Yay.
Everybody.
Jeremy. No, you guys are wrong. No.
I'm sorry, who's joining us on the show tonight?
I figure you guys are getting pretty good. I'm Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. Burt Reynolds. Yeah. That's a band. I'm wearing a hat.
How you doing?
Yeah. You're like 1940s Burt Reynolds?
Glad to be on your show, Quality Time.
I've never seen a person other than Burt Reynolds who only phones in acting. Like, you understand? Like, some people yeah. are like, all right, we see that Robert De Niro phoned this one in. Nope. Burt Reynolds, every single one.
Okay. I always, before Burt Reynolds delivers a line, I always assume he forgets what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, like, it's always like everything I've ever seen him in, it's like, he's always had something better to do than
yeah.
be in this movie.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm lying. I'm actually Norm MacDonald as Burt Reynolds.
So. Oh, yes. Now I see it. So, yeah, that's amazing.
This is so
wearing a big funny hat.
So I'm going to call you Meta Jeremy Woodward.
Okay, so back to my magical power, and my magical power is that no matter what yard sale I go to, I always go to the bag that has a breast pump in it. So,
oh, okay.
And nice. I always go to it. I'm like, another breast pump. And I've literally done that 3 times in one Saturday to 3 different yard sales. So, and they have the coolest bags for breast pumps.
They do.
And they are
do.
Fun to try out, even if you're a man. So,
you just put the tip in it.
I can't imagine that weird milky substance that comes out of your body and just like petrified fucking meats.
Can I say that when I was 16, I actually did lactate?
What? Wait a second. You say
Wait,
that
what?
One more time.
You acted like the age mattered in that story.
I think it was one of the most disturbing days of my life when I was in my social studies class and all of a sudden some sort of liquid comes out of my tit and like, what the fuck is this shit?
It's not lactation if it's not milk.
I don't know what the fuck it was.
That's secretion, not lactation,
well,
my friend.
When should a man have anything come out of his tit?
Well, never, but that
exactly.
doesn't mean it was milk.
Hey, women,
well, whether
women
it was
love
lactose
my man milk.
Or just like,
my man
know.
Milk brings all the girls to the yard and they're like,
you
what
know.
The fuck is that?
Exactly. It's like oh, one God. Of those, it's one of the, and it's like one of those things, it's like, do I have to give this to a witch now or something? What do I do with this? So I filled up like a gallon. I'm kidding.
There's a lot, Jeremy, in your, 46 Ooh. Years of life.
It's probably one of the most disturbing things.
How has this never come out to me
yeah.
as a thing?
I've only
in my 34
I've
years,
only
I've
decided
never
heard
to this
share
story.
It on a podcast. So,
I
for
waited,
the comedy effects.
I waited till like 200 strangers would hear it to tell you.
Damn right. So they can ask me about it in weird situations at a party. So.
God damn it, Jeremy.
I'm sure it's happened to other people, but I
you tell yourself that, right? Like, you want that to be true, right?
It's probably some weird chemical imbalance when you start, like, having sex at age 16. So.
Well, it's hormonal, I would assume, yeah. is that there's some kind of estrogen happening right. that's...
Probably means that I'm, like, a hermaphrodite and I have, like, a secret vagina or something.
Ooh, well,
so.
If you're a hermaphrodite, you know what that means. Jeremy has to be the heroine in the new Halloween film.
Whoa.
I want to be the new Freddie Mercury.
Isn't that the rumor that like is Jamie Lee Curtis was born a hermaphrodite? Is that like an urban legend?
If she's
I feel
a
like that's an urban legend.
If she's a hermaphrodite, I'm gay.
I'm gay. I'm 100% gay for her. I'm 100%. I would
be happy to be on Jerry Springer if it was Jamie Lee Curtis.
I would fucking let her stick that clit right in my asshole.
I'm so
not even
boring.
Scared of it.
I'm so boring when it comes to finding out about people's like things like that. Like so and so's gay or like somebody's a hermaphrodite, because to me, like, if it doesn't affect who they are as the person that I know them as, I don't care. Like Jamie Lee Curtis, that's not going to affect how I view her in a movie.
No,
I'm going to be like, okay, cool, I don't care. You know, like if somebody's like, oh my God, Anderson Cooper is gay, I'll be like, good for fucking him and his partner. Let him tell the news. Like, I don't care.
I'm sorry. Knowing that Anderson Cooper is gay makes Kathy Griffin torturing him hour after hour before New Year's all the more satisfyingly funny.
It is pretty funny to see how uncomfortable. By the way, Kathy Griffin,
that's funny.
It's a tough sell, okay? You're a tough sell, lady. And on top of that, this very homosexual man just having the advances of a very, let's admit it, C-looking woman, right? A C-looking woman. Just like, I'm flattered that you think that I would be on your level of fucking, even if I was into chicks, right? Like I imagine, like, I get it. Like, as far as, like, gays go, I couldn't pull an Anderson Cooper, right?
Sure.
I'm looking for somewhere Louis Anderson level. Sure. Like, that's the guy, that's the kind of bear I'm going to pull.
In weird places.
Yeah,
patchy hair in weird places guy.
Yeah.
There's only one.
Or Rip Torn. You know what I mean? Those are my two options.
There's only
at himself for being gay guy?
Yeah.
That's who you would get.
There's only
too.
One woman that a gay person wants to kiss, and that's Madonna. So. Mm. Or Cher.
There's plenty of gay people I would kiss, but they'd all be dudes, and it would be on the cheek because I love them.
Ooh. But before we get into tonight's movie of the evening, we do have some Joe Robinson corrections.
Fabulous.
Hey, Joe Robinson, do you have any corrections for us this week?
More reverb. I gotta have more reverb.
By the way, Joe Robinson has mentioned how much he hates the reverb that Jeremy uses, and Jeremy has done nothing. But when I gave him this feedback that said we need to get more reverb, this is really gonna work. He's gonna love the next one.
He had an Amazon shipment of reverbs, and in that moment, he was like, "I'm on my phone, getting more."
I bought two more reverb machines, and they are gonna all work in tandem to make the most annoying reverb
of
all time.
If you put a mirror over a speaker, does it bounce back and double it?
So the first correction, this is actually goes back to the Lethal Weapon episode where we were talking about Gary Busey, who was in the movie Buddy Holly.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, Eric says, is Buddy Holly worth watching? Jeremy responds, no. He goes, Joe Robinson goes, the fuck? And he goes, and Lou Diamond Phillips, Eric, this is a quote for me. Didn't he win an Academy Award? Jeremy goes, yes. No. He was nominated for an award. And Lou played Richie Valens, which is another correction. And
I thought I said Van Halen. He played Van Halen. I'm kidding.
What?
Richie Van Halen. Sorry.
And he also said, you guys aren't going to mention that Al Leong was in Die Hard, a movie you've already mentioned 10 times. Okay. Well, that's...
Who's that?
Al Leong.
Who's Al Leong?
I have no idea. I'm reading the text.
I just really like that Joe Robinson is picking ones that I'm not on. I like that. Which I was sad about, and now I'm like, oh wait, Joe Robinson corrections that I'm not involved in. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're correction free, okay? Because we're putting our necks out on the line for this, Kim. Stand out there with us. So those are our Joe Robinson corrections.
Thank you, Joe.
Over the last couple episodes.
And apparently watch Buddy Holly.
Yeah, apparently Buddy Holly's a great movie that I should watch that he won an Academy Award for. Never seen it. And you know what? I love me some Lou Diamond Phillips.
Who
okay?
doesn't?
I'll
That's
admit
a power
that
actor.
Real
yeah.
quick.
Yeah.
I loved him in Tremors.
I'm a Young Guns 2 guy, okay? Not the original.
Okay.
Young Guns 2, okay?
You've done an impression of Joe Robinson so much that it's part of your verbiage now.
Jeremy's over here. He's going to do the reverb. Whatever. It's going to be fucking horrible. We're going to listen to it.
I was very glad to meet him at the Regal in Wah.
Yeah, you mentioned
it
last time.
Standing right next to me, and I'm like, he still didn't recognize me until he came in, so it's awesome.
Part of me wishes you were setting up a standee when he had to do the at Marley Station when he proposed to Katie at the movie theater.
Yeah.
That would have been great if you were just out there like, oh, hey, what's going on? I got you this Transformer sword. Do you want this? That would have been fun. We would have had a good time.
That's fun. That's sweet. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
let's get it on.
Yeah, I guess without further ado, guys,
yes.
We have our movie of this week. This is a Kim pick, a Kim Kimma Ridge.
One of my all-time favorites. And can I just say before we jump in here, I am honored to find something that not only Eric had never seen, but also Jeremy had never seen, because you've seen some crazy shit. And this movie, to me, is so quintessential for so many reasons.
I like to think this is the first black film I've ever seen.
Can I tell you, when you picked this movie, how... When I talk about a problematic episode for Jeremy Woodward...
Oh, wait till Wade's the White Zombie.
Listen, if you ever hear... If you... Listen, whenever there's a part in the show that got edited because it was too graphic because of what Jeremy said, you're just going to hear a thing go, goof-a-goo! If you hear a goof-a-goo later in this episode,
okay,
you just know that something got removed that was going to be a problem on Twitter.
I want you to leave it real far so they still know what got removed.
Yeah.
But we're going to remove it.
We're going to remove it. Yeah. We just want you to know that we didn't let you down.
Can't you just always overdub it with a little kid that says, that's racist!
Yes, that's racist!
Or just somebody being like, no, 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 no.
You've gone too far.
Oh, without further ado, tonight we're going over 1973's classic Coffee.
Best soundtrack ever, am I right?
It's pretty funky.
Getting you ready for your day or your night, whatever you're doing, you're getting ready in your bedroom, you're feeling good. Fuck yeah. What?
This is a good song.
This is good shit. This is good shit.
Coffee is the color.
I used to like to listen to the Jackie Brown soundtrack when I was getting ready. It's obviously not the same as Sid Haig as Omar. Yay! Yeah.
Now, a little known thing is that our resident music man, Jeremy Woodworth, has...
I felt that this was kind of black, but it could be made more black.
Mm.
Just Jeremy as a white man.
Has feelings about how black this is. Sure.
This intro maybe could have been a little bit blacker.
That scares me, but okay.
So Jeremy came up with his own intro for this episode, and
I feel this is a much better version.
Jeremy, do you want to say anything else before this comes out here?
Do you want to apologize preemptively?
I think this is a very more timely version of it.
Okay, so here's Jeremy's theme song of Coffee.
Just in case they redo it.
In case if they ever rebooted it. Like, if they rebooted it now, you'd obviously have to update it for today.
Let's call up Quentin Tarantino.
Okay, yeah. If we send this to Quentin, I think he would use this. Or like Spike Lee, like a Spike Lee joint. Like, I could see him using this.
Well, honestly, if it was Quentin Tarantino, this would be it.
Yeah,
this is what he does. He loves this shit. Yeah.
You have like one of those, Cardassian chicks as Coffee instead. So,
right, without further ado, let's
please. I can't even with that shit right now.
I'm excited to see what Jeremy came up with here. So here's Jeremy's Coffee song.
This is the whitest shit I've ever
heard. Coffee is the color. Coffee is the color of your skin. Coffee is the color. Coffee is the color of your world. Coffee is the color that we don't usually serve at Starbucks. Coffee is the color.
That's so on point.
Do we have to put a coffee?
Where we call the cops on you because you don't pay. Coffee is the color. Of your skin. Although most of our coffee has a lot of cream in it, so it isn't really coffee-colored. Here at Starbucks. Starbucks coffee. Where you get coffee that isn't really black.
This is
black
good.
Coffee.
This is pretty good so far, dude.
Yeah, this is great.
Wait till the solo.
Oh, Jeremy hits off with a solo here.
Whoa. I'm picturing Master Shake playing this right now. I don't know why.
Wait a second. It's a little out of tune.
Jesus.
I can only imagine your poor wife listening to you make this atrocity.
Wow.
Oh, That was beautiful, Jeremy. Beautiful.
Not a second take in all of that. So.
Yeah, that was the first take. I'm so surprised. Amazing. I don't believe it. I want to go back to the files.
That was great. That was great.
If that isn't funkier than Will Smith, I don't know what is. So.
Oh, good work, Jeremy. You know, I really feel like you've brought a much more authentic piece of trash to the table.
I feel darker than Dick Cavett tonight. So,
the movie opens up with a young black man. He comes in and says he's got this broad who'll do anything to get straight. And he comes up to the local drug dealer within this establishment. There's titties in the corner, I think, already happening.
This movie has a constant flow of titties.
There's never not titties. Always like, appreciated. More than a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
So. You can tell that he's an upscale black guy because he doesn't sound that black because he's a businessman. But what are you telling me about? Can see, I obviously even have a white woman here.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a little sample because it was at the beginning of this clip, and you can hear him say this. Right here.
Anything you want, big man. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus.
But yes, he talks like this.
Yeah.
I am the local drug dealer. Like, he can't be
he's no George Jefferson.
No, he's
not. I'm going to have to refrain myself from making as many Black Dynamite references as possible, because Black Dynamite is an amalgamation of all the great blaxploitation movies. And it's amazing. And if you haven't seen it, just smoke a little doobski, get in your jam jams, and get ready to have one of the funniest experiences of your life.
Have you seen the trailer for the new Black movie that's the same guy?
No, same Michael Jai White?
Yes.
Oh, I love him. Oh, the director, not the actor.
I don't know if it's going to be the same actor, but it's the same director and making fun of old Western-style black
exploitation. Oh, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, okay, the guy from Reno 911, Cedric, I forget his last name.
The Entertainer.
Yes. the black dude, he's got, like, real big eyes. He plays a part in Black Dynamite, and he's like, Black Dynamite comes into their, like, pimps meeting, and he's like, you ain't selling no more drugs in the community. And it's probably a takeoff of this guy, because he goes, but Black Dynamite, I sell drugs in the community.
It really is. You're really affecting my business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he goes off and reluctantly checks out this broad he's got in the car, and it's a very lovely, passed out. It's just looking like fresh for the Cosbyan.
Long,
you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
she's back there, and this is Pam Grier's first film ever, and her tats.
Well,
are
not her first
on,
film ever, but this one may put her on the map.
This is okay. This is the one that got her on the map. She's looking, first of all, fine throughout this whole film.
Dude, her boobies are amazing.
Yeah, listen, it was a time of top heaviness.
Yes.
Titties were in the 70s.
And naturals.
And,
yeah, big swinging naturals.
They were, boy, she got some big old aerial.
I'm about
on
that
her.
Life. Honestly,
she got them dinner plates.
Yeah,
and I'm okay with it.
I'd buffet off that
she
any
literally,
day.
She has literally like 90% of the front of her breast is all nipple. It's fucking. It's pretty. I'm okay. It has like satellite nipples around it.
Yeah,
like that.
But that's the one. The other one,
the
not quite
nip.
As much.
Yeah,
not quite as much. A little unevenness. But you know
I like
what?
It.
Uneven. That's all natural, buddy.
Yeah, I don't want you.
That's
to fix
her
that.
Real God given blessed booby nature. That's just amazing.
It was good. And she gets in the car. And then turns on her charm and decides to go back to
she's got that
the
sweet
guy's
Maryland
place.
Voice. Yeah.
She's like, I just got to get straight. I'll do anything. Anything? Well, oh, Jesus.
Anything at all?
And I thought it was also weird that the kid driving him, he was just like, do you think you both can handle it? He's like, no, I just want to get high and watch. And I was like, who was just like that open about
yeah,
this
and he
wanting?
Also said another thing. He was like, she's too much for me.
Yeah.
I was like, when has a man ever said that?
I've said it constantly. That's my pickup line, actually.
You're
that's
way too
I got
much
my
for
old
me.
Lady. I'm like, there's no way I can please you, but I'm going to try. I'm going to give him a darndest.
Give him my fucking damnedest.
So the next scene, we get to see Pam Grier's titty. Just one titty at the
just
beginning
just one.
Here.
Welcome to this movie.
They're fooling around in the bed. There's the guy that drove them over there is cooking up a batch of heroin, it looks like, and frying it up in the...
It's called Johnny Black.
Johnny
Black?
Come
back. Yes.
What is this now?
The new the Western blaxploitation.
Oh,
is
nice.
Black.
Okay, cool. So, ooh, I'm about to watch.
It's a good trailer. It's a very.
I
it's
can't
so
wait.
Much like Black Dynamite. It's
I
awesome.
Can't wait.
The fella in the bed who's the main pusher goes, "God damn it, man! What are you making a souffle back there?"
Yeah.
Which I also think is a great line. Yeah. In this film,
in reference to hardcore drugs.
She tells him to go out over and turn out the lights, and when he does. Pam Grier, aka Coffee, is sitting on the bed with a double barrel shotgun pointed at him.
Sawed off double barrel shotgun, and she is not fucking around.
Did she have that in her purse?
Yeah, I guess it was in her purse, or it was probably hiding in between those big old titties, because we only saw one. We don't know what's underneath them. I mean, she could hide a fucking bazooka underneath those cans. And she produces this wonderful fucking side cannon, and she spits out this line here. "This is the end of your rotten life, you motherfucking dope pusher!"
And then,
boom.
Let's say it all together, she blows his head off.
Oh, and it's pretty good violence, yeah. Right from the get-go.
I love how they edited it, because it's like, bam! And you see they took the effort to blow chunks out away from his face. You're looking from behind his afro.
Yeah.
And you see red and light glinting off of chunk pieces. And immediately, as soon as your brain goes, "She blew his fucking head off," it goes, bam, and it moves on over. We're just moving to the next scene. You're like, God damn.
I think they show a front part of his face for a second where it's just completely blood. Like, it's just nothing but red. Like, falls
God
over.
God damn it.
Oh, it was dope.
Welcome to this movie.
I was like, yeah, this was good. I mean, it's just in
great
the same
start.
Vein of Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yes.
I'm like, somebody gets their head blown off in the first minute of the film.
But what's amazing about this movie is such a great crossroads between everything that I love. It's cheesy because it's 70s, and the way that it's filmed, it takes itself way too seriously for what they're actually showing you. But then the thing that they're putting in the forefront is a strong female character, but it's not bullshit. She's sick of the people in her town. She brings up her sister having to deal with drugs. This is something that touches us all personally, and especially growing up in Baltimore. So, like, it's got this serious element to it, but the edge is taken off because it's a goofy 70s kick-ass movie with titties everywhere. Fucking great.
It was pretty good. It's pretty good from the get-go.
There's a car flip.
Listen, we'll get to all of that.
I'm so excited.
She then goes to the guy who was cooking up his little batch in the other room, ends up forcing him at gunpoint into the bathroom. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Hey, that's cool, blah, blah, blah." He was just like, "No, you're going to keep selling that shit. You got my little 11-year-old sister hooked on this."
What?
And then ends up blowing his dumb ass away too, which was so she's done. Now she's been part of a double homicide within the first couple minutes of this
and then
film.
She goes to work
and then she goes to her other job because
as a nurse at a hospital.
Next we see Coffee at the hospital. She's like a nurse or a surgeon's assistant. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. They don't really clarify.
What I would assume, because I think they should have clarified this better. They would have in a more modern film. But I think she's probably an ER nurse because she sees both the gunshot wounds, the gunshot victims, and the junkie overdoses. So she's seeing all of the bad parts of the drug dealing problems in that city that come to that hospital. I would assume she works in the ER.
I would go with ER, but maybe, you know what? I didn't live in crime ridden New York back in the day. I mean, maybe that's just patient first back then. They were like, "Yeah, we see gunshot wounds and flus. Those are our majors."
There's a kid with a cough, a lady who wants to see if she's pregnant, and like four people who are ODing.
So the cops show up. She also messes her job up seconds with a like showing up to work. There's like a guy who's kind of dismembered on there, like mid-surgery, just guts out everywhere. He's like, "Oh, bring in the next nurse, please. I need help." And she immediately fumbles with it. She's like, "Oh, Coffee, get out of here. Blah, blah, blah." And he just immediately kicks her
out. She's killed two men.
Has anybody seen the new Death Wish?
I have not seen the new Death Wish.
I didn't put two and two together that the original Death Wish was 74, and he's like a architecture guy as Charles Bronson, but in the new one he works at a hospital as a doctor, so he sees all the shit going down.
Right.
No, he's a doctor in the original Death Wish too.
He's an architectural.
I thought he was a doctor.
He works as an architecture guy.
I didn't even know there was a new Death Wish.
Anyway, yes, new Death Wish with Bruce Willis, and obviously they're taking from this because she works at a hospital. So put two and two together. He's a vigilante. She's a vigilante, you know, trying to kill drug dealers. So There you go.
If the white people need to steal anything else from the black population.
Damn you, Bruce Willis.
Next Trump is going to have an amazing pair of black woman's boobs. Like, can we just have something?
Yeah.
Look at my boobs. Look at how great they are.
Look
They're
at my
making
boobs.
Great American boobs again.
You know, you put a big old rack of titties on Bruce Willis. I see a revival in his career. All right. Right now. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Big ass titties rolling around. Oh, it'd be good. So anyway, the cops show up at the hospital and they're investigating the OD homicide, supposedly. Oh yeah, she doesn't blow the guy away. She shoots him up with a shit ton of heroin. So
yeah,
she doesn't kill
and
him.
She's like, I don't know. This might kill you. It might not, but fuck you.
So she ODs him, so it makes it look like he possibly blew the guy's head off.
Yeah.
Or, which is weird because he's in his boxers. So you're like, is he blowing this dude? Or
she's
maybe
smart.
It's not that crazy.
Doesn't even matter. She's smart.
She's like, I've seen suit in the streets. Anyway.
And the worst part is he was going to shoot the heroin, but oh, not that much heroin. Oh no, no,
that'll straight kill me. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
So one of the cops is Cop Carter, recognizes Coffee, who is at a coffee table, at the coffee break room table, drinking coffee, who then offers Carter coffee, yeah. Which is one of the many coffee references on top of her being named Coffee that happened throughout the film. There's a tally that happens. I'm like, they get coffee
I
here?
I just wish that every time they mention coffee, they'd look right at the camera. So,
Coffee is also the beverage that we love the most in this film.
Because it is black and it is good.
So he says, you know, my buddy thinks it's a rival mob hit, but, you know, it's sounding a little fishy. And she goes, now you're really sounding like a cop. Well, he is a fucking cop. You understand? This is
yeah, she way just undermined him the rest of the time. You Coffee. Finally sound like a guy that's doing your job. That's cool. Good for you, man.
Calm down with your hot takes, Pam Grier, okay? Anyway, he asks her out on a date, but she's kind of cock-blocking him, and you wouldn't want to see what I do. And you're like, assuming it's the murder, but no. Next, they head to the drug clinic that she visits to see her sister, who's 11 years old, in the rehab clinic.
Fucked up.
And she gives Carter the skinny on her sister and her brother. Her brother, I guess, OD'd already, was leaning on her sister to give her more money. The junkies were, so she was already going down a wrong path. She's all fucked up, addicted to
it's
dope,
terrible.
And now laid up in a hospital.
So terrible.
And she also says, don't you think we should kill people like that? Carter goes.
Wait a second. While they're at the junkie place, you have this long scene where he stands in front of the camera thinking, you know, her sister's here and she has a problem with drugs. Maybe she's the one that killed that guy last night and almost OD'd the other guy in the bath.
She has like
I couldn't be her.
She has like a breathing tube on and like IVs and he's shaking her. Where were you? Where were you last night?
Not my sweet big titted coffee.
Oh, what
couldn't
the hell?
Be her. So, let's see, where were we? She's
talking
blocking.
In the car.
So they're talking in the car on the way back when they leave, and she goes, don't you think we should kill people like that? And Carter ultimately takes the moral high ground. He's a good cop. He says, you know, we don't kill people like that. She says, why don't you just arrest them all? She's like, it's not that easy. It goes all the way to the top. Blah, 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 blah.
She's not wrong, but she's representing the point of view of people in like a town hall meeting. Like, I don't give a fuck what makes sense. I want to see results. I'm sick of this shit.
Like in the 70s, because you could still just kill people. There wasn't constant surveillance.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
You could just run around.
Vigilantism was possible back then. It's not really, it's not, now you're a mass shooter.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know, a scumbag. Like, Death Wish can't really happen.
But that's the thing that's sad. It's like all these innocent people are getting shot. If you heard on the news, like, today a madman ran into a rehabilitation center for pedophiles and shot the place, you'd be like, good. That sounds good to me. Let's keep letting them do that.
Yeah, I think, like, the whole pedophilia thing, like, there's only one people that are like, well, you killed a pedo ass. I mean, who's gonna put you in jail for that?
Right.
You ever seen that fight? There's a horrible true crime video you can watch from, like, I want to say it's like the 70s or 80s. Anyway, this guy, he's going on trial for molesting some kid, and he walks by this phone booth, like this phone banks in the thing, and a guy turns around from one of the phone banks and just point blank 38 specials
Fuck
this guy
yeah.
in the head. It was the kid's dad.
Fuck
he immediately
yeah.
just drops the gun and goes like this, and you're like, oh
Worth
my god
it.
Blah blah blah.
Worth
by
it.
The way, that guy went on trial, just pleaded temporary insanity, and all the jury was just like, yep, we think
you're solid, we got
insane.
You
and
yeah
it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like, yep, we cleaned that
the,
up
the worst part is that what's his name? Fatty McFatterson from who directed Bowling for Columbine used that clip to show how bad gun violence is. It's like, no, that's the best gun violence.
Yes, so. I mean, if there's any gun violence I'm for, it was literally that guy who got his kid molested. It's shooting the guy that molested
that
him.
That is literally
like, okay
the plot
that,
of the movie A Time to Kill.
Yeah, that Liz, you understand? That's Samuel L. Jackson's
Such a good movie.
Role.
Yeah.
By the way, awesome movie.
Such a good movie.
One of the hardest movies to. I think that was the first movie I ever watched where I was like, I sat there, I was like, this is a hard scene. The sexual assault of that little girl
yeah.
is one of the most graphic and hard things to watch.
Because
and
they
don't
have
really
to show
anything.
You that much for it to be just, so awful. And then when they give you the details again later
yeah,
in the courtroom, you're like, oh, that, yep, there it is.
Yeah, I hope they die. I hope they burn in hell.
Right.
Before they did the movie with Malcolm McDowell, where he played Ivalenko, who is the Russian killer that killed all the kids.
Oh yeah, he's
year
one
year
of
after year.
I'm surprised they've never done like a. I'd love. They did a Citizen X. A
Citizen
movie
X
him.
With Donald Sutherland yeah. and the old guy who was in Walking Dead, who had the RV.
Yeah.
He was the molester.
Oh,
they had
man.
The trial, and at the end of the movie, they walk him down a long hallway, gun right to the back of the head. That's the end of the movie. It's
yeah.
like, oh, the trial's over. And shot right in the fucking head.
Well,
so.
He had said they wanted to, that was the one thing he really wanted. He was like, I think that you should examine my brain to find out what's so fucked up with me. And the Russians were like, oh, that's the one thing you want most in this world to find out what you got? No. And they were just like, fuck this guy.
The Russians,
like, fuck this guy so
yeah.
hard.
The Russians hated the crime more than anything. He's like, this had to be a fucking American because this doesn't happen in our country. Who the fuck is this guy? And it was a real shame to the Russians. Like, oh no, this happens to Americans, not us. Oh,
well, the thing
no.
is, there is a worse child killer, I want to say, in South America that actually got a higher body count than Malenko did. And he is a total, like, he is, if you look at the serial killers list, he's number one by like a lot. It's like 250 kids or something. He just had like some, he was a semi-rich guy like in South America. So he just like would buy children from like the townspeople and just
oh
do the
God.
Most horrendous thing. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
We digress.
How many more people do we need to murder? A lot.
A lot. Yeah.
Okay. There's people. There is a time to kill.
We're on coffee's side here.
We're on coffee's side. We're team coffee.
Back to coffee.
So, Carter then drops coffee up, coffee off, and there's in front of this establishment, and there's a limo there, and she notices that this limo is here early. Coffee talks to the limo driver and says, Mr. Brunswick is almost done with his business, so you can go ahead and go in now. And she goes in, and you see your second set of titties for this movie, this
mm-hmm.
very lovely white woman dancing behind a fire like this.
Yeah.
And it's like a good, I feel like 15, 20 seconds of titty
mm-hmm.
shot that you just
yeah.
get to see here.
And they're nice.
You're like, yeah, it's a nice set of cans.
Nice set.
Nice
she's got
set.
A great body. She's
yeah.
not pushing it too hard. She's not holding it back.
I feel like that wasn't the ideal body for the 70s, but now it's like the perfect body for like now.
You know what's nice though? If you
it's
notice when
great.
She kind of turned around, her back had a little bit of like... Like when she bent a certain way, mm-hmm. she wasn't totally skinny, and I think that's way more attractive.
Well, that yeah, I mean, plus is in now.
Yeah,
plus size women.
Well, plus,
is
but
where
in
that...
certain spots, like they want
yeah.
you to have a super tiny waist but a big ol' ass.
Yeah,
and it's like that's such a particular person. Like, what if you just looked at a woman and went, "Nice, I like that."
Nice, I like you.
And you know
like
what I love
stuff.
About this scene? It starts off with the lady with the titties, and she's dancing. Mm-hmm. There's like candles around her, and you're like, okay, this is she's like a go-go dancer in a some kind of strip club, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see two guys, and you go, okay, well they're at a strip club, they're watching this lady, and these guys are talking, and they're talking about business, and you're like, well, that's pretty typical. But then coffee shows up, and you're like, okay, she came to a strip club, whatever. They're talking business. No one's paying attention to titties, right? Then it cuts around. To coffee's like on the other side of her shoulder, and a waiter comes by and takes picture of two old white people.
Yeah.
This is a restaurant.
Yeah.
This is somewhere they went on a date and there's just titties happening.
Yeah, you know, we got to go to the titty place tonight.
They're
honey.
At a fucking Pizza Hut, okay? In Los Angeles.
This was their Hooters. They had real Hooters back.
It was awesome.
You know, when they say that there's certain things were just better, the cars of the 70s and 60s, things, the weed back then was dirt weed, but it was nice and you could get it, you know? They didn't make Hooters like they did back in the
day.
They
don't make anything,
you know, where you
like
actually
made it.
Saw real Hoots.
Yeah. Can I just talk about my first wife in Vietnam?
Yes, you can.
I really thought I fell in love the fact that she was a stripper. And that first night when we consummated and got married and everything, I was really upset when I found out she was 12.
Jesus.
Oh my God. I thought there was like limits for strippers and the fact that she was so young.
Show, we had to get her it name annulled. Was Show Young.
Oh my God.
The fact that we had to get Jeremy. It annulled, I thought she was 16.
Oh, Jeremy, you're getting close to being on Coffee's hit list now.
Hey, Jim.
That's where you're getting.
Heard your 50th's coming up. That's amazing. Where are you guys going? Just going to go over to Cannes, show the wife a nice time. Get her a rose and a turkey basted fucking steak, and it's going to be just great.
And the fact is, they never said that poor couple never did get that picture.
He's like, you know, the titties are a plus, but I come for the for the braised duck. Like, that's what I
literally
come for.
Literally.
It's the best in town. So, Brunswick, you're going to find out, is the gentleman who Coffee considers to be her man.
That's her babe.
He's sitting down with a city councilman, and Coffee gets to meet the city councilman. You're going to see him going back and forth, talking about that. And the councilman tells him that, you know, Mr. Brunswick is going to be the next congressman here.
What?
And she goes, I've never slept with a congressman before.
Hey, girl, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't watch this movie with your parents. There's a lot of sex.
Don't do that. Now, while this conversation's going on, you notice there's this weird white dude who has glasses on, but like one like prescription and one is like a dark lens glasses,
like what, half sunglasses,
yeah,
half glasses, glasses,
half glasses,
yeah.
And he goes back and robs some weird stripper in the back.
Well,
at
what he does,
point,
he takes his knife out and he sticks up to her her dress and kind of tears her dress.
And we get to see another titty.
We get to see a titty, and he goes, "I'll cut it off.
Yeah,
I'm gonna remove your titty.
I'm actually a licensed mammogram person, and that titty has got a lump."
This is another thing that in the 70s, because this is a weird era in film history with women, because this was one of the first generations that acknowledged that violence against women was wrong, but they continued to be able to show it this way because it was so prevalent.
Yeah,
so there wasn't, it wasn't like now, if you showed a man holding a knife up to a woman's exposed breast in a closed room by themselves and him going, "I'll cut it off."
Yeah.
That's way too hardcore for now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because people have never seen shit like that.
Well, have you ever watched Mad Men, by the way?
Yeah.
You want to know my favorite episodes of Mad Men, where it just shows the difference between now and then, is when he meets that one lady who's like a client and she's like mouthing off to Don Draper and she goes, "I will not have a woman speak to me that way." Yeah. I was just like, oh shit.
Whoa.
Like, I kind of walked around and I was like, "Honey, are you okay with this?" She's like, "Oh, this show's great. This show's great. This is good." Something about Don Draper saying it though is like, "I'm not gonna have
Well, no, it's like it's like admitting, it's like showing, like, look how fucked up that was. Wasn't that fucked up? Yeah. Like, if you don't think that's fucked up when you see it, you're kind of on the wrong side of the fence.
It's true. You know, you ladies have been through a lot. You ladies have been through a lot. So, next we see Coffee back at Brunswick's place, and they are a fucking.
They are a
they're
fucking.
Getting
down. And it is beautiful.
And I like how Brunswick doesn't have, he's got a total dad bod. He's got, like, kind of some small man tits. Like, a nice, like, I actually have counted this as our fourth piece of nudity is seeing his titties in this scene.
Okay.
Because they are, like, I felt uncomfortable looking at them.
Like, he used to play football and eat a lot of raw meat, hamburgers, and now he's just kind of let himself go.
Now he's just a slip and slide champ. Like, that's the only thing he does.
He had
now
too much Chinese food in college.
And I didn't like how wet he looked. Like,
oily.
They just misted him down. Like, why are you misting down this body? You need him dry as possible. Like, you don't want to, if you have man tits, you don't want to accentuate the moistness of yourself. Like, dryness is the only thing you want to exude, right? Like, you don't want that hot, sweaty.
You're just saying that because you just found out your brother lactated.
Oh God, I'm so fucking still can't get rid of that boner. Coffee sits down by the fire next to him, and he says, you know what, I just want to go back to Hawaii, and blah blah blah. They talk about this nice trip. He's just like, maybe after the campaign, baby, you know, not right now. And then she goes down and then blows him, and then
she loves vacations.
Yeah, she loves vacations so much that she'll give you a blowjob. By the way, I'm going to Disney World, haven't gotten one blowjob yet. Not one stinky blowjob. We're going to Disney.
Not
that's
yet.
A whole week.
Not
okay.
yet.
Okay. All right. I'm crossing my fingers.
Keep the door open. Yeah.
Honey, we're leaving on a plane. We're going to be around family and kids. I'm like, blowing off of it. I washed my penis.
Yeah. You know what you do when coffee is too hot? You blow on it.
Yeah, exactly. You Kimberly Ambrose. So it then pans up to his face and he goes, huh. When you put it that way. Oh.
Whoa.
Coffee then drives to work, and she gets almost sexually assaulted by some weird white dude in the parking lot.
Can a bitch just not just go to work?
Yeah, I like who's the guy that just hangs out in hospital parking lots like, wait till one of these nurses show
up.
He's
so angry about it.
Yeah. But luckily, Officer Carter is there to the rescue.
Ooh, that was close.
They go inside for what? A cup of coffee, which is now our second break for coffee in this movie. Carter, I have this quote right here. Carter, have you done something that you were, when you were really, really mad, and it feels like she's about to come clean about the murders, but then all of a sudden, he gets a call, and he picks up, and he realizes, you kind of gather that it's his partner, and he says something along the lines of, he says, I'm not cool with it. And if you go along with it, then I'm going to have to go ahead and bust you.
Dang.
And he's just like, all right, good cop. Hangs up the phone. Next, we see the payphone that his partner is calling him from and a car leave that place to head over there. And the cop does not look happy. He's like, looks like Carter's fucked now. Yeah. So they sit there and they talk for a moment. Then all of a sudden, boom, they burst in the door, two masked gentlemen.
What?
He tells Coffee to go wait in the back room. Doesn't grab his gun. I feel like the first thing you do is get your gun. He protects Coffee because that's how good of a cop
he's
Carter
a gentleman.
Is, right?
Yeah.
So
he was taken off guard.
They come in and they immediately start beating the shit out of Carter.
I didn't
and
like
putting
it.
The boots to him. He doesn't have his gun. Coffee comes up and fucking smashes like a vase over one of their heads. So she kind of puts up a little bit of a fight.
And she offers a game changing solution. Leave him alone.
Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen.
So they beat the shit out of Carter and they kind of beat the shit out of Coffee in this scene.
They almost rape her. The one dude pulls her titties out.
Yeah. At the last minute, they were like, let's get out of here. No.
The guy, well, the one guy, this is like a typical movie thing, right? If you look at the like subconscious shit, the guy in the black jacket pulls her titties out like, I'm about to rape her. Mm-hmm. Like, we just caused chaos. I'm going to have to do something terrible.
Dude, I can't murder people and not rape. What
right.
is wrong with you?
Get
we talked about this in the car before we
you
got out.
You have to be a more self-controlled murderer, I feel like. So then the guy in the white jacket is like, we don't have time for this. So the guy in the white comes to save her. It's like an angel, and the dude in the black is like a villain, you know, and he pulls him away, and that's the only reason she survived. She really was kind of like, this is about to suck.
Yeah, but we did get to see Pam Grier's titties full on.
They looked
the
like waterbeds, and they were
so
amazing,
like,
beautiful.
There's something to say, like, it's like when you stand up sometimes you get to see the voluptuous of a cup, right?
Yes.
But when you lay down, they were still ginormous,
and the nipples pointed up.
Oh,
usually they
gosh.
Separate and they point way over on the either side of each other.
Fun fact, I actually read this in the thing. Pam Grier's nipples always point true north. She's like a human compass. It's amazing. She's really good like that.
What a miracle, that woman.
Next, we see the hospital and Carter is laid up like full body cast in the thing like this. And they said he has brain damage. If he's lucky, he'll be able to go to a bathroom on his own one day. And she is clearly saddened by this, and she vows that she's going to kill the men that did this. The cops come and visit Carter, and they seem real heartbroken. Okay,
yeah.
Like, oh, it's so sad that he's done. Like, and Coffee hears it, and she knows these motherfuckers did this to him.
These pieces
you know?
Of shit.
Next, Coffee goes to track down a girl named Priscilla. She tracks this crack whore Priscilla down because she is the skinny on whoever was making the deals with the cops, or at least that's what she thinks, right? She explains that she helps sew her face up. That's how she knows who she is from the ER. Coffee wants info on King George, the guy who was paying off the cops. Priscilla used to be his top bitch, okay? Mm-hmm. She was like a top... Now, I've read the book, how I'm familiar with pimping, okay? I'm kind of familiar with pimp knowledge. I read the Iceberg Slim book.
Okay, yeah.
And it is fucking phenomenal. By the way, you can listen to it on YouTube, the entire book on audio. And it is... phenomenal. First of all, if you want to hear human degradation at its highest, it's basically the manipulation it takes to be a pimp and the horrible things that pimps do to women and the human trafficking element. But really, every time you do it, like, it's broken up with these parts where she's like, hey, I thought I was your top girl. And the first line out of his mouth every time he says something as he goes, bitch, this, and then he will address you. But it's always bitch, like, and I audibly laughed throughout the entire thing, except for the horrible human trafficking things that he did to the
pimping is like one of those things where, like, you expect to hear bad shit, and then when you do, you kind of just go, like, a part of you, of course, is like, oh my god, that's so terrible for, like, everyone involved. But then there's this other part of you that's like, Pimping ain't easy. I mean, that's the fucking game, right? Like, had to keep her in line.
If only they couldn't all be good, nice pimps like Harvey Keitel.
Yes. So. Harvey Keitel, the bad cop. So
no, Taxi Driver, he is the nice pimp.
Oh, yeah, he was a nice pimp. Okay. So, she gives him the skinny that he likes exotic girls. She also drops an N-bomb like that, which is, I'm like, you listen, I realized that you had a black pimp at one time. That doesn't authorize you to use the N-word.
She had a breakup. I knew I shouldn't have called him the N-word.
Yes.
So,
they ended up, she actually got her face cut by him. It's just, she's got a big scar. She also wants to know where his supply is, and then she gets mad, like, this is too much. Mm. Oh, she also explains she likes exotic girls, likes you to crawl on the floor, then wants to spit on you. Like, okay, I'm not going to kink shame. I get it. Like, you know, sometimes you're into shit. I'm not here for that. I realize in the 70s, that was a deep cut right there.
No, that's a deep cut at any time. If you like degrading a human being as a way to get off, that's about as far as it gets.
People like that stuff, though. And there are people that are willing to be on both sides.
There are people who want to be degraded. The problem is that the real hardcore people who, I'm not judging the people who are into that. If you want to be a giver and you want to be a taker, that's fine. No judgies. But that particular ism really doesn't truly get off at the highest level unless the person doesn't like it.
Yeah.
That's the problem I have with that.
What I want to know is, who is the person that actually chooses to be peed on or pooped on? That's what I want to know.
Germans.
Oh, okay.
Japanese. Yes. This is so easy. What do you mean?
Have you not seen the internet, Jeremy? Where have you been for the last 20 years?
My cousin mentioned a Richard Pryor movie, which I don't know the name of it, where the guy's like, will you pee on me? Shut the fuck up, man! And I don't know the name of it. So
Priscilla ends up pulling a knife out, and Coffee goes over and breaks a bottle, and they have easily overpowered Priscilla.
It's awesome.
Strong arms her in front of there, and she tells her the drugs are under the fireplace. Then big old Harriet, her pimp, comes in. The lady pimp Harriet comes in, and a fight ensues where Coffee narrowly escapes because this lady is literally Sloth with an afro.
Yeah,
she walks
in.
It is nuts. She flips tables like she is a fucking
And you don't
insane.
Expect it to be a woman, so you're so thrown off. Like, you're like, whoa, what?
So,
that's great.
Next, we get to meet who I will say is probably my favorite character in the series here. We get to meet none other than King George.
King George. A great, great soundtrack, although it could be better.
George.
What?
Rolls up in this fucking Cadillac.
That car, I couldn't shut up about that car.
First of all, his outfit is like this bright yellow jumpsuit.
And it can't even be explained. You literally have to see it.
When
like,
you see his moose knuckle,
he's wearing
it's
tape.
Literally, you see both of his balls here. Look at his crotch area.
Yeah.
Look at the knuckle.
That's real hugging.
You see his outline pants. Of like the most crucial moose knuckle. Google King George from Coffee so you can see what this motherfucker looks
the only thing that King George needs, he needs stilettos with fish actually in the shoe.
Yeah. The only thing tighter than the grip around his balls on those pants is his grip around a woman's throat.
Yes. Because he's a pusher.
Can you pause it?
Yes.
Oh, go ahead, Kim.
Oh, sorry. He couldn't be wearing more clothes at the pool. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, it's a very strong
pool. It's hot.
He's
wearing like suede in the 70s. It's too much.
That's the pimp lifestyle, though. You got to look good.
No disrespect.
I thought that theme was pretty badass, but I think it could be a little better.
Oh, yeah. You know, Jeremy also came up with a little something for King George, too.
It could be a little better, a little bit more funky.
George. They call him Mr. Cool. What, don't play him for the fool? That's right, he's the king. The king. King George. My main man. George. He's a pimp. He's a pusher. Yeah, he's a strong king. He'll use ya. And use ya. He's a pimp. That's right. He's a pusher. That's right, he's the man. That's right, with all the dope. George.
Thank you, Whitey. Thank you for that very white version of a black song.
That was very... Jeremy, I don't know how to get in touch with Quentin Tarantino, but I want him... I want him to know that this exists.
I
want to
be the new 5678s, so...
I would say Twitter, always the way to go there.
So, King George rolls up dressed in this yellow jumpsuit with the moose knuckle from hail. And as we had mentioned, he's into exotic women, and... Pam Grier really, listen, sometimes, is it possible that maybe acting is too good at certain times? Because I pulled up this little clip just so you could hear a little bit of how Pam Grier tried to sound exotic for this scene.
Nice.
Here we go.
You're the lady from Jamaica who called me.
That I am, ma'am. And I can see that you're not at all disappointed, of course. So I'll come straight to the point, as I like to do. Boss, another drink for my friend here. I presume a champagne cocktail is sufficient? Good, ma'am. Now, I assume you've got complete protection from the police, have you?
Of course,
ma'am. Now, I contacted you as soon as I arrived from Kingston because I'm told you are the very best there is in your business. That right, ma'am?
I'd say so.
Good, man. Now, I don't do no leather work, man. No whips, ropes, chains, or none of those fetish freaks. Just plain sex. But for that, I don't mind saying that I am the very best in my business.
Oh my God, could there be a more Jamaican woman?
I would just give her all my money. Like at that, I'd just be like, I love you. Like, oh my God.
Oh man. I mean, master of disguise. Yeah. Coffee.
Was she acting during the scene? Because I was just looking at her tits.
You are blinded by the lights. And she's wearing this nice, like, white bathing suit. I mean, she looks fucking smoking hot right here.
To pick
it's
white and then to need as much coverage as she needs, that's a big old top on that bikini.
You're right.
It's even got the side boob coverage. Like, it's not like triangles to a string. It's like a shape of a bra, but with the triangles. Like, it's
It has ruffles.
A lot of fabric.
I do. I love the ruffles. next, we head up to King George's little brothel he has with all of his hoes sitting around in the main area of chilling. Just basically a two bedroom apartment. Like yeah. it's not a big place.
Just in their panties.
But the one thing I've never seen this in. I never read about it with Iceberg Slim. I've never heard of this ever in my life. King fucking George has a call service mm-hmm. that goes and cold calls people to find hooking jobs for the most gorgeous women you've ever seen. Like, first of all, there's no way that this needs to happen.
Yeah. But
they do. They have a beautiful Asian woman that calls up and like, yes, we got your number from such and such. Yeah. I wanted you to know that I had a warm reference that I'm coming in. And she's like, yes, we have this wonderful blonde... blue-eyed this and basically talking about the woman that
she's explaining
at.
Herself as that woman.
Yes she's explaining herself but looking at the girl who's laying on the bed next to her
and of course they lay around naked. That's what they do.
Just lay around.
Well, why was she what was she cleaning her back? I was confused. I wanted to figure out what had happened to her.
She's
back
like, you need to stay off your back for a while. She's been fucking so much she's got rug burn.
Burn. Ow.
Oh man.
What? And that's the one she sends.
Maybe she had the dog scratch fever because the guy was scratching her back. So
I mean, I really feel like King George is more than just a pimp. He's an entrepreneur on a different level.
Yeah.
He's constantly putting his assets to work.
Oh, these, these are no street whores. These are upper class whores.
Yeah. You keep them in an air conditioned room until you can find somebody that agrees over the phone to meet them at a secure location.
These are like Michael Keaton, Henry Winkler whores. So
I like it. So George and Coffee show up and immediately George is showing off his pimp game. He goes, what is this, a goddamn pajama party?
No, he walks in and has a fucking problem.
Yes.
He doesn't. She just secured a blowjob over the phone. Mm-hmm. For just she called a guy and was like, hey, Isabella told me that you like da da da. Let's get you a blowy at work. Right. And he's like, I'm down like the underground. Right.
I like it that they invented YouTube or YouPorn suggestions.
Yeah.
Like, you understand? We saw that you watch this, but maybe you'd also like these fine words.
Yeah. So it works. Like, this woman's calling and it works. They don't even have to be on the street. It works. And he comes in, opens the door, and goes, what the fuck is this? A goddamn pajama party? Like, wait, why did you walk in with a problem?
Yeah, because that's the pimp game.
That's the
pimp game. That's part of the manipulation and control. You have to have total control
gotta
over
keep
these.
Keep them on their toes.
Listen, you got to keep them within. There's a where they're allowed to go outside the lines, but you got to be hard when they go outside your imaginary line. You know what I mean?
Your imaginary
Otherwise,
line.
You're going to have to feel the pimp hand.
Otherwise, a pimp just comes right in the room and just instantly starts smacking everybody without any words.
Yeah, and you don't want to leave marks.
I actually learned this from the Iceberg Slim autobiography. That's when a pimp, there's called what's called a Romeo pimp. He's like a lover. He's like a guy that like builds them up. He's like, oh, I love you, baby. You got to do this and you got to do that.
Gross.
And then there's what's called a gorilla pimp. And a gorilla pimp is a guy who only rules by force.
Oh, wait a second.
And then Iceberg Slim, he was both. He said, he's like, there's some girls you got a Romeo, and then there's other bitches you got a gorilla.
Right.
And he was just like, and he went between both of them. It's just how he ran his.
Can I just stop this?
Process.
This is a little too much like Roseanne Barr mentioning gorilla pimp. So.
Gorilla.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. You mean like a gorilla fighter, not like a gorilla. Okay.
Yeah, I was talking today at I was talking today with my bud Tommy Simbazo, and we had mentioned how Stan Lee had actually taken over his Twitter feed again. So
does this have
he
to do with him
control.
Pimping and acting like a pimp?
There's a point to this. There isn't, but it's good. He goes. He had taken over his Twitter feed again, and I was just like and. Tommy's mentioning how like, oh, now it sucks because there's not a professional person who's good at the internet doing it. And I was just like, you know what would be great is if he's like, yes, people are stealing my drugs. He's like, you know what would be great is if he posted something along the lines of, he's like, oh, I just took Ambien and wrote 3 new issues of Black Panther to clear Ambien up from Roseanne's racism.
Did you see that the makers of Ambien responded and said that
so
racism
funny.
Is not a symptom or a side effect of their drug?
Can I tell you my Stan Lee story from 1975?
I guess so. I brought it up, so I've opened this.
You
are in
that
box. I remember from 1975 that my head cartoonist Kirby came up to me and said, you're making too much money. I said, God damn you, you're the fucking slave. And I slapped the shit out of him. They're my fucking X-Men, my fucking Avengers. You just drew the drawings and I fill the bubbles, motherfucker. And I slapped the shit out of him. He died penniless. I'm Stan Lee. Fuck the guys that draw the pictures because I do the stories, motherfuckers.
Even Jack Kirby knows. Was very important and influential and probably, I'll say, more important than Stan Lee. But Stan Lee
but
is still a treasure.
But you've got to keep your pants
strong. Todd McFarlane could go suck a big dick. Fuck all those Mr. Drawing Picture motherfuckers. I'm Stan Lee.
King George then heads back to the back room and then sees his top girl who comes out, who's a very petite young white woman. Mm-hmm. She's not no big titties, no big ass, just a very, I would say, what Sir Mix-a-Lot would say before big butts and I cannot lie, mm-hmm. This is the magazine woman, right?
Yes.
Of the time.
Yes, and also probably from her behavior, a young runaway that he took in at a very young age because she is so dick thirsty.
Yeah,
for him.
She loves
it
her
is
some
so
King George.
Sad.
She
good,
wants
good
to,
backstory.
She wants thank to you. Unwrap that fucking banana hammock. He's fucking.
I've never seen a
around.
Whore so denied. She gets turned down like 5 times. Mm-hmm. She's like, I just want to suck your dick, and he's like, mm-hmm. Not right now, bitch.
I've already had my dick sucking for today.
Yeah,
get back in there.
Like so many times. So. She's like, so can we like fuck her? And he's like, yeah, that's not gonna happen right now.
So George and Coffee get to undressing them there, and we get to see Pam Grier's titties again. And they look amazing, and then he disrobes down to his like to his pubis area and then walks forward, and I'm like, oh, please don't unleash those huge balls that I can already see through your fucking thing. Next it is a giant party with all the whores in his little sweet apartment up there. George is decked out in red now. He looks like a fucking nasty ass pimp. And next we meet Vertoni, who is accompanied by his two henchmen. One of them is Sid Haig.
Whoa.
Look at that. A very young Sid Haig.
Trim Sid Haig.
And for those of you who aren't familiar with Sid Haig, he's been in tons of movies, but probably most famously The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses
as
none other than Captain Spaulding himself. Yes. So,
who was supposed to be Marcellus Wallace in the original Pulp Fiction.
Oh, really? I didn't know. He would have been a great Marcellus Wallace,
agreed.
I think.
Agreed.
But you know what? I'm glad we got Ving Rhames, because Ving Rhames definitely brought...
Amazing.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad... Like, I wouldn't say change it. Like it,
no, he brought
all.
The smooth caramel-like nature to Marcellus Wallace that made you not hate him and makes you sad when he becomes a victim.
Yeah. I'm going to get medieval on your ass. Like, yeah, that is
amazing.
One of the greatest
and
lines.
It would have changed the mythology if he wouldn't even had the Band-Aid on the back of his neck where they stole his soul.
Right.
So.
That is part of it. So, at the party... the main girl comes over and then spills a tray of drinks all over Coffee,
this
and her
bitch.
White dress is ruined. Her titty somehow also pops out for just a brief second.
Just a second.
I don't know why I've seen it every time. I
was
just
like, a mistake.
That's another titty. That's another titty. I just count the titties. So she uses this as an opportunity to go back to the back room and mess with the stash. And she basically goes in, takes all the drugs out, and then puts in and waters it down
with sugar.
With sugar. Oh yeah. Now she then goes
replaces it all with fentanyl.
Yes.
God bless her doing the Lord's work.
She then goes in and then sticks razor blades all in her hair, which we don't understand why. I'm like, oh, I guess she knows she's about to get into some shit. Like, it's cool. Like,
why.
Women hide razor blades sometimes, and I'm like, all right, cool.
I never understood that. I thought she was hiding the drug stash in her head and not,
this is
and
a
not razor blades.
This is the difference between
blades.
Men and women. Because women know that even when we do a good job, we're going to get our asses kicked. So I might as well have someone come out with a handful of cuts when they go to grab my hair, which they're going to. They're going to do that. It's either going to be a man or a woman. Somebody's going to grab me by the hair because I'm about to fuck shit up.
And that's how you have to roll sometimes.
Yeah,
so
always.
She comes back out into the party and she goes, oh, Meg. You don't have any salad. Salad bowls are in the face.
Salad bowls are
and
in the face.
Immediately Caesars that bitch up real quick.
The party goer's response to this is fantastic because King George immediately pissed, wants to get his bitches in line.
Yeah.
But a guy literally puts both his hands on his chest.
Vertoni.
Like, no, no, no. They're going to fight. And that means one thing and one thing only. titties are popping out.
Foxy boxing.
Yeah.
And literally a giant fight ensues where she takes on the whole brothel of women.
It was nine. And nine titties, I counted.
Yes. Yeah, so many, every interaction, titties out. Titties out here. Like, that's how, that was the Mortal Kombat finisher move for every single woman, was just like, as soon as their top's out, she's no longer able to fight.
So. If you could have added like a boing to the scene, like every time some titties came out.
Also, Meg comes over and tries to grab Coffee by her hair, and then she digs into all the razor blades and comes off of that. And I don't know why. I saw it happening and I was just like, oh, there's a mad razor blades in there. She's going to be in trouble. And I saw her hands. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, that would suck to get like.
Well, you're going to the hospital now. Before, this is like a fun girl fight at a party, a bunch of whores fighting each other. Now you have to go to the hospital. There's going to be a record of this. Like, King George is pissed. Like,
by the way,
what the fuck?
It's not a safe thing to do. I mean, I don't know how Pam Grier comes out unscathed from this because they're double-edged razor blades.
Yeah,
you understand? Yeah. Like, their scalp on the other side. There's no way her scalp is less fragile than this lady's hands who try to grab her hair.
We've all seen how Mick Foley works.
The only other time that I can think that you can really put razor blades in your hair is if you're trying to hide diamonds and you keep like John Pesci from like whacking you on the back of the head.
Yeah.
See if there's like another diamond in your hair. So
the scene ends. Coffee puts an ass woman on all these broads.
You should watch this scene with your shirt off.
Yes,
quite honestly.
I get
just
fully
get in the spirit.
Aroused.
Yeah. Just let them titties out.
So she goes back to her place and then ends up packing her 12-gauge shotgun in her purse. Oh yeah, Vertoni also sees that her handle her business. She's like, I must have this woman tonight.
Oh, can I give a shout out to titties?
Yes,
please.
Three.
Here's the song Jeremy recorded about titties before.
If only somebody reposted my only picture from my Coco Lane appearance where I had my shirt off and my body covered with cream and my donkey head, and that was James Finn.
Classic James Finn reference.
Yes.
So
thank you, James Finn.
Driver comes over and picks up Coffee and takes her to Vertoni's mansion. Vertoni is in his finest Hugh Hefner gear, looking
dorky as
fuck.
He is such a fucking asshole. He is Sonny Bono and Leprechaun.
He really is.
They're brothers.
Except he's rich and powerful.
Except he has everything Sonny Bono and Leprechaun wanted to have.
I imagine when I saw him, I was like, please talk like Joe Robinson would. Like, when I saw this, I was like, you like my mansion around here? Hey, why don't you come over here and suck my dick?
Like, he's like, nice? He's like a less charming version of the Continental. He's the worst person ever made.
So they have some champagne, and she gets right down to business, checking out his stash, if you will.
And
I ain't talking about the one on his face.
Whoa,
girl. They go into another room. She grabs her purse.
He makes it very clear that he is going to hurt her physically because she's being very, and this is what I mean, right? Like, she's being very like, I'm down to do what the fuck ever.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, like anything. And
me
his response
and
this to
this horrible Jamaican accent are willing,
or lack thereof,
are DTF right now.
And his response to this, instead of being like, cool, like, this is what I like, da da da, he takes both of her hands and twists them back towards her face and then pushes them down so her wrists are bent.
The classic WWE test of strength, like where they lock up and like, oh, this guy's too strong,
you,
I can't handle it.
I don't know if that scene is allowed on YouTube, but can you try to find that? Because the thing she says after that is buttering him up so hard, like Paula Deen. She's really like, I'm gonna get this fucking guy to believe me. Like, I'm gonna fuck him up, and the only way to do that is to say whatever is gonna get him to believe me. Basically, she says something along the lines of, she goes like, please, I'll do anything you like, I just need your hot white body.
Yes.
It's so
said no one ever.
Yeah, like, she's being so like a narc, like, I just wanna get high and do drugs, you guys.
So she tells her to crawl all over, and then she
I'm pretty
pulls
sure
the...
Rob Mayer hears that every night.
Yeah. Oh. Please pull out your sweaty red-haired body. We love you, Rob Mayer. So anyway, he tells her to crawl over.
She's like, keep the watch on.
She pulls the gun on him, which is like a somehow like a homemade silencer she's made for it.
Yeah.
Very, you know, the ingenuity in Coffee is just amazing.
Yeah, she's been to prison.
And then, you want me to crawl over? You want to spit on me? And just as she's about to blow him away, Bertone's men come in at the last minute. Strong armor. And she blames all of it on King George.
Yeah.
So she literally just rats out that motherfucker who's already a dick. You're like, nah, it was King George who put me up to it. And Vertoni decides that she's gonna go, he's gonna go send King George a message that everybody will see.
This is the great thing about having a female lead character, because when a male lead character is apprehended by the enemy, you just go, oh man, that's gotta really hurt his pride, they're probably gonna punch him. But when a female character is apprehended by the enemy, you go, she's raped. That's gonna be the worst thing ever. There's so much more tension in a female lead action movie. And actually, Quentin Tarantino has said that he believes Pam Grier to be the first female action star.
From my point of view, all I see is her face getting very cut up. That's all that happens.
I hate it.
Also, the one-eyed guy comes in and basically IDs her as Coffee and says, we're in more trouble than you know.
You best to recognize, motherfucker. Yeah, you are.
Now, next,
I must say, this is probably the greatest role of Radar from MASH ever.
Is it Radar from MASH?
No, it okay. Kind of maybe.
Okay, it was a stretch. I'm sure there's
Gary Berghoff.
There's a single listener, and by that I mean it's only Joe Robinson that got that reference, and it was just like, yeah, you know, that guy does kind of look like Radar. I'm not gonna look him up, but he does look like Radar.
But before MASH, it was him as the evil pimp kingpin white guy. So.
I say we cut her up and then feed her the fish.
Gary Berghoff.
So next, George is back at his place and he's breaking up some drugs. George is having some top bitch problems because she wants the dick. She's begging for it. And he's like, woman, I can't be giving you dick right
now.
She's like,
don't you still love me?
Yeah. You know, he's like, you're not going to make me go back on the streets. But he then goes, no, I got to go meet Vertoni's men. So he goes down to the car.
Well, then he asks her, how long till you can be banging that pussy out again? And she goes, about a week.
Yeah.
About a week. Give me like a week. My pussy will be back to
I'm
back
sorry.
To good.
I didn't know your pussy got cut up when you grabbed her hair. So anyway, he
that
goes
means
down.
She's on her period.
he goes down and hops in the car and is greeted by good old Sid Haig, who's playing a character Omar I had not mentioned earlier. Sid Haig is in there, greets him in the car with a gun pointed at him. The driver goes, sorry, King, I can't argue with a 45.
Ruh-roh.
George quickly realizes that they are not going to the park.
What? I want to go there.
They take him to a desolate area. They then tie a noose
desolate.
Around
it's so
his
nice
neck.
Today.
They tie a noose around his neck, which the imagery is strong here. The imagery is real strong of a white man tying a noose around him. I mean, if you watch this movie, there's a Vox think piece article that's written on it the next day, right? Like,
yeah,
if they were to
research. Again, this is a time when they were willing to put stuff in movies like this because no one had ever said, hey, you can't do that. You know, nowadays people would riot if they saw that. But the fact of the matter is they were bringing up a very real issue using a realistic plot line.
And I think he even mentions something along the lines of, he's just like, this is how we used to lynch them back in the day. By the way, when did Russians have black slavery? I wasn't aware of it if it existed.
He's just crazy.
So they then tie the noose around him and end up dragging him through the streets of New York City and stuff. But it very quickly becomes quite comical, as much as this horrible atrocity.
It's so bad that it goes to the level where you're like, I can't feel how bad this is anymore. I just have to let it be funny, sort of.
Like, he literally looks like DJ Jazzy Jeff when he gets thrown out of like Uncle Phil's house. Like, the body is so clearly not. They're like going through random like boxes and stuff. And, anything that they can run this
banging him against
into,
curbs.
It's just like everything, just like
and no blood. blood, by the way.
And only one little bloody scene is when they stop it at the end and they look at him. He's just being a giant pile of
meat. And it looks like somebody took, like, you know, on a kid's show when it's like claymation, it looks like someone did like tomato marinara sauce splats all over him.
He's like, and this was the witch's hair.
I will say this. I don't know why necessarily. I'm sure we could go off on that on a whole other podcast episode itself, or maybe a therapy appointment, but I don't know why that bothers me visually more than like rape scenes or
what.
I think because in this movie you expect it.
Yeah,
you expect to see women being aggressed. There's a lot of drugs and pimping and titties being pulled out, and you're like, okay, if I have to sit through an almost rape scene or the suggestion of rape or an actual rape scene, which I do not love ever, it's just so uncomfortable. That the black guy being dragged behind a car is literally like, oh, this is too much for me. Like, I'm super uncomfortable.
I think it was a little too obvious when they dragged him into a parking lot with obstacle course of crates and barrels just sitting randomly in a giant parking lot. So that was a little too obvious.
They had everything but like the two guys that are bringing the giant pane of glass across the road just at the opportune time. Like, oh no!
Oh no! Yeah.
Did anybody ever play the game Burnout, where the whole point is to crash your car and to have a guy fling into like a giant dartboard?
Yeah, or it was awesome.
Or to see how far he can go, which was just kind of funny. So
next we get to see Brunswick filming his own little commercial where he's talking about the people and the struggle that the folks have in his district and stuff like that. And director comes in and says, that's a great job, you look real convincing in there, real you're really feeding the bullshit, top dollar. We then see that Coffee is locked up at another site inside of a sauna. She's holding a giant rock, making a ruckus in there, hoping that Sid Haig, a.k.a. Omar, comes in through the door so she can whack him with the rock. She gets his attention, but he doesn't come through. But she surveys the room and finds a small hairpin, like a little bobby pin, and she starts to sharpen it. That'll come in later. Now, back in that room, we basically have the councilman that we met earlier, Brunswick, everybody, all of Vertoni's top guys, the one-eyed man, all of them are sitting in that room. They bring Coffee in front of the gang, and Brunswick says, "That's just some broad I fuck."
Damn.
You can see it really
disrespect.
It cuts into her a little bit. But when they ask her to tell the truth, he was like, this man had nothing to do with it, you know. But and then he doubles down. He's like, I had nothing to do with this. I had no idea. She was like, and to show you how much I am, go out back and kill this bitch.
Jesus.
Oh, and you could just see it in Coffee's face, like, this motherfucker right here.
Well, she comes hard.
Ugh.
So for somebody to be, she didn't expect that. You know, to be so betrayed, like, dude, I'm the one holding the double barrel shotgun here. Who the fuck are you to do that to my feelings? Cut deep.
So they go and basically hop in a cop car. It's two of Vertoni's men or it's Sid Haig and two cops. One of them sitting in the back, one of them sitting in the front. All three of Coffee, Cop, and Omar are all sitting in the back seat, and they take her out to a desolate area underneath the freeway, and she decides to turn on a little bit of the Pam Grier charm.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, she's like, oh, you know, it'd be the best is she gets a little freaky with him, and she's like, oh, shoot her up first, and then I take her outside. We do the thing.
And it was so easy.
Yeah,
it was so easy.
So they shoot her up, but little do they know, the drugs are not going to OD her because she's replaced them all with sugar, which I feel like if you shoot up that much sugar is still very detrimental to your health.
Oh, I have hypoglycemia. Right? I would die.
Diabetes.
Immediately.
Yeah, I would die.
Immediately, she has to remove one of her legs.
I'd be like, right? Funny joke, you guys, and I would just start bleeding out of my nose.
Yeah, I feel like you still die if you shoot up a massive amount of sugar into your veins.
That
like,
wouldn't
that
work out for me.
Work.
You get an amazing sugar high. That's like drinking a lot of Jolts.
So Sid takes her to this romantic romantic pile of garbage and lays her down in the trash. And he's like, let me, she's like, what are you waiting for? Get it out. And he whips it out. And just when as he mounts, she takes that sharpened bobby pin that she took and then stabs him in the neck like four times. And it's pretty
awesome. Right where you want it to go, too.
Right in the jug area. Oh, it was pretty cool. They realized that it wasn't dope and it was fake sugar that she had replaced earlier, and coffee makes her escape across the freeway.
Real fast.
Yeah. As she's making her way across the freeway, one of the cops follows suit, and he gets fucking epically run over by a truck. And it's fucking like, nails him so hard. The driver cop pursues her in the car. Coffee makes her way down to a construction area, but keeps running in places where the car can clearly run her over. There's this open pipe. Run to this other open space over here. Serpentine motions. Like, it's ridiculous, her escape plan here. Up until this point, she then goes and picks up a rock, her friendly old friend the Rock, throws it at the windshield. It shatters the windshield like spider glasses it all the way across. He can't see, immediately flips the car. It's just like, oh my god, like I've never seen that. No one's ever thrown a rock in a car before. A man with a gun who clearly has been in gunfights,
a trained police officer.
And then she walks over, grabs the shotgun out, and then she's like, wait, no, this thing's gonna light on fire. And boom, and shoots it, and then the car ignites and basically turns them into a pig roast.
To see him struggling under that car as he was dying was very touching and sad.
Yeah, it was.
As he saw nothing.
So. Yes. So Coffee picks up, goes over to the bus stop, and a ne'er-do-well picks her up. They head to the liquor store, and when he goes out to buy her some booze, she goes and steals his car. Takes it back to the bus stop where she gets the shotgun. And it's like, you know what? You just can't trust a random prostitute these days.
You know?
It's like, ugh. Who's this guy who picks up a random girl and then leaves his car running?
Yeah,
like,
stupid.
I don't get it. You know, maybe it was love. Maybe
I know I don't know you, but do you mind watching my keys for a minute?
Yes. So, she's now ready to enact some good old-fashioned vengeance. She heads back to the meeting place and where Brunswick is. Brunswick leaves before she gets there, drives off in his dope-ass Corvette, which is a pretty nice car.
Wasn't that one of the first years of the fiberglass Corvettes in the 70s?
Yeah, it's a really sexy-ass car. The one-eyed man, he says, oh, the boys aren't back yet. And he's like, oh, that's them. So he runs to the door, and in epic fucking fashion, Pam Grier takes this car 40, 50 miles per hour right through the front door where he's standing, wipes the one-eyed man out, just fucking kills the shit out of him, hops out of the car with a shotgun, takes out another guy, boom.
I think that's one of the things I love too about this movie is, like, you know, like Jean-Claude Van Damme and like stuff like that, they have like Chuck Norris, like, you know how they're gonna fight the person every time. Chuck Norris is never gonna throw a like grenade or like chuck a knife at somebody. He's going to take him down with his bare hands. Jean-Claude, same thing. Like, Coffee, it keeps upping her willingness to fuck shit up in various ways. There is no mode of killing or violence. She's just going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
I love that.
So she then goes after Vertoni, who jumps into the pool. He pleads for his life and says, I'll give you money. She goes, okay, how about $1 million? And she goes, okay. And, he was just like, I just want vengeance on Brunswick anyway. Where did he go? He goes, he went to the beach house. She goes, I know the place. He's like, okay, boom, and then shoots that motherfucker right in the face in the pool.
Yeah, Coffee.
It was pretty dope. So
no mercy.
So she goes, that's for my sister and a nice cop named Carter.
Yeah, girl.
She goes off and speeds off into the night to go find Brunswick, the last man on her hit list. She stealthily enters the beach house. Howard comes down, and she sees the Coffee sitting there with a shotgun pointed at her in the nice little in the nice little seat there.
Fuck you.
Just coming down to point a gun at you.
Isn't that convenient?
He goes, ho-ho! I thought... She goes, all your friends are dead.
Nice way to start.
Yeah. He goes, seems like a dream. I did it he tries to explain that he's like, I did it for the brothers and sisters. Sometimes you have to do a little bad to do a big
okay,
good.
Okay, Al Capone. Yeah. Oh, fucking K.
And she goes, bullshit, you're just doing it for the white man.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty dope. And he starts to sweet talk her, though. She's like, listen, I love you. I did this for us, and I did it for our community, and we're going to be better than we ever were before. And you can see her heart softening a little bit. Because, you know,
this is her kryptonite.
Deep down, even though he's done some shitty things, love does some crazy things to you sometimes.
Yes, she's not ready to see him that way.
Yeah. So she softens her hand, but all of a sudden, you hear a voice from upstairs like, Howard, you coming back?
And it's a white bitch.
It's the wonderful, beautiful white lady who was our first titty scene of the movie, who was sitting, you got to see a full rack shot of at the first part of the movie, because that's the place that he bought, and now he's fucking the help.
He done fucked up.
Right after that, she fucking shoots him about 5 feet away.
Listen,
with the
you gotta treat her like a lady, and she'll come home to you. Okay,
yeah.
You know, cheating on people and shit, and just running around disrespecting. That's just a girl. I fuck. Oh, you fucked up, son.
And then you fucking some white broad up here. Boom! Catch a 12 gauge, Holmes.
Does she really kill him, or does she really just like emasculate
him?
She
shoots him in the dick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right in the dick. I don't even think she cares if he lives or dies, because if he lives, he's doing it without a dick.
Yeah.
So
got medieval on his ass.
Yeah, she did.
Last motherfucking 5 minutes of this rapist redneck motherfucker right here.
So and that, oh, I love it.
Coffee then heads out to the beach where she walks off into the sunset, and that is the ending to Coffee.
Yeah, can we just go over that one more time? She shoots a dude in the dick with a shotgun, puts it down, walks into sunset, and roll end credits. That's a fucking killer way to end a movie. They were like, you know what? You've seen all you need to see.
Yep, that's...
I have shut down...
That's the story.
I have shut down my multinational corporation for some more training of sensitivity, and I'm also going to make sure I'm going to make a new version of the movie Coffee for Starbucks. So that's my coffee for Starbucks.
Coffee for Starbucks.
Yes.
Okay. I like it.
That movie ticket would cost 3 times more than normal movie tickets.
10 times during the movie, black men come into my Starbucks and use the bathroom no matter what they want.
Well, that's it. That's the end of the coffee, everybody. Thank you for joining us on another installment of Quality Time. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Kim, what's our movie next week? What are we doing?
Our movie next week? Oh, my God. I would love for them to vote. What do they want to do? Terminator or all, White Zombie?
This is all Kim's pick. Just let the viewers know what they should listen to.
Oh, let's save those then, and let's do House on Haunted Hill.
Ooh,
Vincent Price.
Triple H, you're doing it?
The Ridge.
Love
The Ridge. I'm always about that life.
So
what if I die? I'm going to need a coffin. Somebody better buy me a coffin if I see that movie.
Coffin is the color of your skin, because you're dead now.
And just a quick reminder, make sure you hop on the Stitcher and the iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. We could really use your support. Oh, you know what? I keep forgetting this. We have 5-star ratings we need to read.
Oh,
we
my
have
God.
Multiple ones.
Let's do it now. Yeah.
I need you to hold me down to it.
Okay,
next time.
Okay.
We're at the end of the episode again, and I forgot to do it. We're going to do it at the top. The
okay.
Next
yes.
Time.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And it'll be amazing.
Well, House on Haunted Hill isn't long, so that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. We can totally do that. Kimberly, where can people find you, young lady?
Hey, gang. Other than the huge at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter and at Panic at the Deli on Instagram, I am headlining and filming at the second Saturday Shit Show in July. We are also doing a special Father's Day show on the 16th Ryan Nazer headlining.
Right.
New dad. It's going to be super fun. Super kick-ass lineup. We're going to have a good time. Come see us at the Auto Bar every month. June 16th, and then the second Saturday in July, I will be headlining. Yay!
All things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Give us a 5-star rating. We love you. Jeremy, take us out.
I'm Alan Alda. I'm glad this movie was so black.
drove their feet. Streets filled with flag-waving fascists. Finally lived down the infamous skinhead studio brawl of 4 years ago. The last thing I wanted was another violent confrontation. Don't be stupid, man. Don't, you're gonna hurt my arm, man. Take it easy.